Shalom, everybody, and we welcome you today to this week's 5-Minute Update, where we examine the news events from the past week as they relate and pertain to the prophecies of the end of days. And our focus is on understanding that the Bible speaks about the nations will divide the land of Israel, Joel chapter 3, verse 2, and the city of Jerusalem, Zechariah chapter 14, and verse 2, in a period of time known as the day of the Lord, which is a term full of days. That will result in the judgment of the nations. The judgment of the nation is war between the nations and economic collapse. What the nations will do as a result of the war and economic collapse is they will restructure, reorganize into one world government with one world currency, the fulfillment of Revelation in chapter 13. Meanwhile, the God of Israel is allowing these events to happen because it sets the stage for the birth of the biblical state of Zion and the gathering of the 12 tribes of Israel, wherein the Messiah will be glorified. So we're going to begin our update today by looking at the current situation with the peace process. There have been what they've called two rounds of talks. And now, to what degree these talks have been substantive, no one really knows. To what degree that these things have been discussed over the years and they just need to come to some conclusive understanding, we really don't know any of these things unless and until they release to us what they want us to know. But in any event, the first article was from the Jerusalem Post, and the Obama administration has invited Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to visit the White House on June the 1st, and Mahmoud Abbas has been invited to the White House on June the 9th. So the headline reads, Obama invites Abbas for June 9th talks. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas will arrive in Washington in 2 weeks to discuss the obstacles to peace with Israel, with U.S. President Barack Obama, the White House announced Thursday in a statement to reporters. They will also discuss our continuing effort to work cooperatively to develop the institutions that can advance the aspirations of the Palestinian people and support the establishment of a Palestinian state, said the statement. Abbas's visit will follow a week behind Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's scheduled White House meeting on June the 1st, addressing the Iranian nuclear program and Palestinian issues. White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel handed Netanyahu an invitation to the White House meeting while on vacation in Israel for his son and his nephew's bar mitzvah. Now, part of the motivating factor for inviting Netanyahu to Washington is that the last time Netanyahu came and met with Obama, Obama gave him the cold shoulder, to say the least. And in doing so, the leaders of the United States and Israel have started to come out really strongly against Obama, and this could adversely affect Democratic aspirations in the November election. So Obama is seeking to try to mend fences and put on a better external appearance regarding his relationship with Netanyahu. So they felt a political need to invite Netanyahu to the United Kingdom, that they're going to portray things as normal. So that's the background behind the invitation and a motive for the invitation. Next article is from World Net Daily, May the 25th. The headline is, Obama plan is to have global troops protect Israel. a U.S. plan envisions stationing international troops along Israel's border with a future Palestinian state. WorldNet Daily authority officials privy to the plans say the Obama administration proposed deploying NATO soldiers along the Palestinian side of a future border with Israel, as well as along the borders of Jordanian state. And this is ultimately what the international community desires, is international troops in the West Bank and in Jerusalem. And they want to have control of those areas to do what they want and as they see fit. So it will be interesting to see whether the Palestinians in Israel will ultimately both agree to this or not. But this is part of the international plan for Israel's security. The last article on the peace process and the situation in Israel is from Haaretz. And this article is May the 27th. The headline is Rabbis and Settlement Leaders. Their position is prevent demolitions even at the cost of confrontation. 14 rabbis and 25 secretaries on Thursday signed a letter calling for mass protests at settlement junctions to clarify to Israel Defense Force commanders that any attempt to demolish buildings will in the streets before the act and after the retreat. The unprecedented call was meant to recruit the public in against the temporary construction freeze declared by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the end of last year as a gesture toward the Palestinians ahead of peace negotiations. Haaretz revealed earlier this month that Israel's civil administration has prepared a list of 46 illegally built settler structures in the West Bank slated for demolition. Some protests at 30 or 40 junctions are enough to spark discussions among this country's decision makers on the future of settlement freeze policy, the settlers wrote in the letter. In order to wake our leaders up, we have to shake up our routine. A large-scale protest on the ground is enough to apply the necessary pressure and to communicate the message that we don't agree with the freeze or with the evil execution of devastation and destruction. The letter was to be circulated among 15,000 homes in the West Bank. The rabbis and the community leaders will also hold conferences to explain the contents of the letter to the public. The letter also said that we call on the people to gather quickly at the exit. After gathering at the exit, the vehicles will head toward the nearest junction to block the roadway and prevent further troops from entering the area and prevent some of the forces from leaving smoothly. At the conclusion, the letter continued, the IDF commanders sit down and summarize the events. It is very important that during this briefing, it will become clear that any attempt to demolish will involve a confrontation at the main junctions leading to the area slated for demolition before the execution and after the retreat. According to the letter, a protest at a main junction, which includes prayer, has two purposes. One, to bring large forces to every junction, which is something that the forces of destruction will certainly consider next time. And two, to apply pressure on the decision makers and to express dissatisfaction with the industrial calm surrounding the freeze. And so those are the articles that I have this week regarding the peace process. Things are moving forward, but at this time, invitations have been extended to Benjamin Netanyahu, and the Israeli government is slating to demolish some of the illegal, quote-unquote illegal ones that were erected, that rabbis and settlement leaders are planning protests regarding this. So next, we're going to move on with the the situation with Iran and what's happening in the north of Israel with Syria and Lebanon. And here recently, in the last month or so, things have really been elevated. And there is definite movement on the ground that indicates preparations are being made for possible war. And so I have three articles to share with you regarding these things. The first one is from the Jerusalem Post on May the 26th. And the headline is Reconnaissance Missions for Attack is a Warning to Iran. Reports that the U.S. Pentagon has okayed reconnaissance missions over Iran was seen in Israel on Tuesday as the first pub said the order also permits reconnaissance that could pave the way for possible military strikes in Iran if tensions over its nuclear ambitions escalate. The article continued that the seventh-page directive appears to authorize specific operations in Iran, most likely to gather intelligence about the country's nuclear program or identify dissident groups that might be useful for a future military offensive. Although it is obvious that the Pentagon has contingency plans for all possible scenarios, one Israeli official said this was the first time that the public is getting word of practical preparations of military activity. Well, we have more practical preparations than just that. The next article is from Debka File, May the 27th. The headline is, A U.S. Nuclear Submarine Crosses in the Strait of Hormuz. Iran reports that an Iranian naval patrol Thursday, May the 27th, detected a U.S. nuclear submarine sailing through the strategic Strait of Hormuz, through which most of the oil produced by Persian Gulf states passes on its way to world markets. Debka files Iranian sources report Iran has placed its navy and army on high alert. Western intelligence and naval sources confirm that a nuclear-armed American submarine has in fact entered the Persian Gulf. This confirms Debka File's report on May the 20th that the Obama administration had decided to boost U.S. military strength in the Mediterranean and Persian Gulf regions in the short term with an extra air and naval strike forces and 6,000 marine and sea combatants. Carrier Strike Group 10, headed by the USS Harry S. Truman aircraft carrier, was due to sail out of the U.S. Navy base at Norfolk, Virginia, Friday, May the 21st. On arrival, it was to raise the number of U.S. carriers off Iranian shores to two. And last week I shared with you that the number of U.S. Carriers that are expected to be in the Gulf by the end of July and into August is four or five. And to go from having one there to as many as four or five, that means definite prep. Exactly what are the developments? Because you're not going to keep four or five aircraft carriers in the Gulf for an extended period of time. They're going there for a purpose. And meanwhile, in Israel's northern border, Syria, Lebanon, and Hezbollah are arming strongly with the cooperation and help of, and the situation has become quite serious. As I shared a couple weeks ago in the 5-minute update, I played for you a video from a retired U.S. general who reported some of the details of this and said, based upon the ground movements, that it's very possible that there could be war breaking out sometime during the summer. And so this article also is from Debka File, May the 26th. The headline reads, Syria has 1,000 ballistic missiles zeroed on Israeli targets. A colossal Iran-funded and directed armament program has enabled Syria to field 1,000 ballistic missiles and Hezbollah 1,000 rockets, all pointed at specific Israeli military and civilian locations, including the densely populated area around Tel Aviv, Debka's military sources reveal. Syria has smuggled most of its stock of liquid fuel-powered ballistic missiles over to Hezbollah in Lebanon, while its own production lines have been working day and night for 5 months to upgrade its stock solid fuel-propelled missiles, so improving their accuracy. North Korea military engineers and technicians are employed on those production lines. According to Western military sources, a command center for coordinating a missile offensive against military and civilian targets in Israel has been operating at Syrian General Staff Headquarters in Damascus since early March with the help of Iranian, Syrian, Hezbollah, and Hamas liaison officers. The command center, operating under direct Iranian command, was formally established at a gala banquet attended by Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, Syrian President Bashar Assad, and Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah in Damascus on February 25th. Its primary mission was defined as target unification, in other words, coordinating any military strike. Military lingo for interaction at the command level to make sure that Iran, Syria, Lebanon, and Hamas do not send short-range missiles flying toward the same Israeli targets at the same time. Each of the four have been assigned one of four Israeli sectors and given specialist training in its features. The new joint command gave Hezbollah Secretary General Hassan Nasrallah the confidence to sneer at Israel's five-day countrywide home front missile defense exercise, which ends Thursday, May the 27th. In a speech on Tuesday, May the 25th, he said, Israel wants to reassure its people and make them feel strong and properly prepared to stand up to all possible war situations, but this assurance is false. So carry on with your drills, he said, but when the rockets start falling on the occupied territories, we'll see how much good they are. The command center's central strategy, say our military sources, is to eliminate the Israeli Air Force edge by releasing a simultaneous deluge of missiles and rockets from hundreds of stationary and mobile launching sites in remote parts of Syria, Lebanon, Iran, and the Gaza Strip. So Syria, Lebanon, Hezbollah, Hamas, they are all looking to send a missile barrage against and in to Israel and to coordinate things with them, ultimately to take Israel. Now, what we need to keep in mind, given this report, as it relates prophetically, in Ezekiel 38 and 39, it tells us that the invading armies, that they come from the north. And then if we go to the book of Joel, which the setting of the book of Joel is the day of the Lord. And in Joel chapter 1, verse 15, it's the day of the Lord. Joel chapter 2, blow a shofar in Zion, because the day of the Lord comes. And there's an army that's invading the land in Joel in chapter 2. And as a result, in Joel chapter 2, there's a call for a fast. And upon the fast being done, that they would say, why should they say among the people, where is their God? In Joel chapter 2, verse 17, it says, the Lord will answer. And then Joel chapter 2, verse 20, I will remove far off from you the northern army and drive him into a land desolate and barren with his face toward the east sea. And it says, fear not, O land, for the Lord will do great things. And so there is an attack from the north in Ezekiel 38 and 39, and the army that invades in Joel 2 is coming from the north. So this buildup is in the north of Israel at the moment, where everyone is concerned that there could be very quickly missiles being fired that can cause great destruction in a short period of time. So things are really going up to another level regarding possible war in the north with Syria and those with Syria. And the United States is bringing aircraft carriers into the Persian Gulf. And the report here by Debka File that Iran has seen a U.S. nuclear submarine in the Strait of Hormuz. These are definite signs that preparations are being made on the ground for war. So the only issue becomes, when would it break out? How would it break out? Why would it break out? So those are the things that we need to be watching. And so my personal expectation is the possibility of something happening is probably beginning late July into August is when the possibility of it starting could occur. Now, it could go on to September, October, or even farther out than that. Things could be delayed. But we'll see how all the developments go. Now, the last two articles I have to share with you is regarding the situation with the U.S. economy. And those who study economics and money, while they tell you various reasons for the Great Depression, most Americans don't know what I believe is the true reason which caused the Great Depression, and that was a two-thirds decrease in the money supply. Money was taken out of the system, so none was available to people. You are going to have economic problems when money is decreased and not available. And so this headline is from the London Telegraph, and the headline is U.S. money supply plunges at a 1930s pace as Obama eyes a fresh stimulus. The subheadline, the M3 money supply in the United States is contracting at an accelerating rate that now matches the average decline from 1929 to 1933. The article says the M3 figures, that is a measure of money supply, which includes a broad range of bank accounts and are tracked by British and European monetarists for warning signals about the direction of the U.S. economy a year or so in advance. Now, these figures used to be released by the Federal Reserve. And to the best of my knowledge, M3 money supply is not being released by the Federal Reserve. They're not providing that information. And so that's why the article says that these accounts, or M3, is being tracked by British and European monetarists. That M3 began shrinking last summer. The pace has accelerated. The stock of money fell from $14.2 trillion to $13.9 trillion in the 3 months to April, amounting to an annual rate of contraction of nearly 10%. The assets of institutional money market funds fell at a 37% rate. That would be the sharpest ever. And then the next article and the last article I have to share with you about the economy is that as far as dollar amounts, FHA home loans, which is usually loans that are given to people when a traditional bank is not able to make loans to them, they had more financing volume than the traditional government-supported home financing organizations, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And this would be in the first quarter of 2010. And this is from Bloomberg. The headline is, FHA home financing volume is a sign of a very sick system. The article reads, loans guaranteed by the Federal Housing Administration, the U.S.-owned mortgage insurer, may be involved in more home purchase transactions than borrowing financed by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. FHA lending last quarter may have topped the combined volume of government-supported Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in a home lending market that's still a government financed market. David Stevens, the agency's head, said today at a conference in New York, this is a market purely on life support sustained by the federal government. He said at the Mortgage Bankers Association's conference, having FHA do this much volume is a sign of a very sick system. And the reason is, once again, is usually FHA loans are given to people who cannot get loans from a traditional banking source. The FHA, which backs loans with down payments as low as 3.5%, insured $52.5 billion of home purchase mortgages in the first quarter, compared with $48 billion of purchases of debt by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, according to data compiled by Washington-based Potomac Partners. The FHA and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which regulators seized in 2008, have been financing more than 90% of U.S. home lending after a retreat by banks and a collapse of the market by mortgage bonds without government-backed guarantees. So the government of the United States is, in essence, responsible for 90% of U.S. home lending, which means the government sets the rules, the regulations, and they determine how the market is going to work. And so these articles are bad signs for the U.S. economy and ultimately the U.S. dollar, because so much of our economy is dependent upon home loans and home financing. And there needs to be an expansion of credit for the economy to grow, not a contraction of credit and a contraction of the money supply. So we have signs here with these things that that it's possible for there to be an economic collapse. And we see the possibility of the economic collapse coinciding with the possibility of war in the Middle East, coinciding with a deadline of this September to reach a peace agreement, or else the Obama administration has threatened to impose a peace agreement. So these next several months leading up and through the month of September, I see, are very critical regarding the direction of how these things play out, because it's very possible that when they do, perhaps in this time frame, that is how close we are to seeing the advent of prophecies regarding the dividing of the land, judgment between the nations, war between the nations, economic collapse. And thus, biblically, the possibility to fulfill the prophecy of the 12 tribes uniting and returning to the land. So I pray that this update has been helpful to you, to help you follow along the news that are happening as it relates to Bible prophecy from a Hebraic perspective. Until we do it again, Shalom in Yeshua the Messiah. Amen.